Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
All right. Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is David from 203 Kombucha. Welcome, David, and thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Happy to.
Yeah. So first question, did I say it right? Kombucha?
Kombucha. Yeah, that's how you say it, kombucha.
I hear it said lots of different ways, and I was just talking to a friend of mine, and she was like, how do you say it? Make sure you find out. Is it like a potato thing, like tomato?
I think there are some debates over the origin of the word, yeah. Kombucha also comes up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that kombucha is how we're going to go with it.
Okay, kombucha. Yeah. I will try and remember that. David, I like to start the show by asking my guests a little bit about themselves, their connection to Alaska, how you got here, and your connection to local food and value-added agriculture, as we're going to refer to this. So how'd you get here?
I got here at the end of a long overdue road trip after quitting a corporate job in California, which is kind of a typical story, but took my dog on the road and lived in a truck for a couple months. And by the time I got to Alaska, which was the destination at least for like a little vacation period, winter was setting in. And I didn't realize that winter was sort of a showstopper. So you
deal.
Get here and you have to stay here or like leave before the snow comes for the first time.
Sure.
So I had nothing else to do, and I had a friend who suggested that dry cabin living is an option for those that are trying to, you know, reflect a little bit.
Okay.
So I signed a lease, and then I just stayed.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
That was 1 year ago.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm new. I got up here. This is my second winter, which is starting off to a pretty California start, looks like, out there.
Yeah. And is that where you came from?
Yep. I lived in Southern California, Central California, and San Francisco. So I spent most of my time kind of going back and forth between San Francisco and San Luis Obispo in Central Coast of California.
Very good. And any connection to agriculture in your background?
Yeah, I mean, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo is a school that has a lot of agricultural engineering.
Absolutely.
I have some family that was raised and they do farming and 4-H stuff near Yosemite. But me personally, and I never got so involved until I was sourcing materials like in the past year, as far, like knowing who to talk to, quantities, and even seasonal stuff up here, which is quite a bit different than California.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So the first time I think that I saw 203 kombucha was at Turkey Red. And of course, I had to try it because I like to try new things. And I was hung up on the name. 203 kombucha, and I googled it, and I thought it was like a area code in Michigan or something like that, right?
It is an area code somewhere. It's got to
be.
Right?
Yeah, somewhere on the East Coast, and I thought, what in the world is with this name? But then I think I was at an event where you guys were serving product at the Muskox Farm, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
And I heard this rippling through the audience that it was actually about the 203 colony families. And that was when it spurred my interest even more, and I thought, I've got to have them on my show. I've got to hear this story. So tell us how you came up with the name.
Yeah, it's a good history lesson for everyone here. If you don't know, then you probably should know. But
yeah.
It wasn't just the winter that kept me here when I moved up here. This valley is a uniquely beautiful place, and it definitely stopped me in my tracks. So as soon as I decided I was staying, I needed to find out why this town is so great and why people are here and where they came from.
Yeah.
And I just started reading and asking, you know, random people on the street. And there's a lot of stories about long families that have been here for generations. And then I started reading about this. I read this book called We Shall Be Remembered, which was recommended to me. I also have a DVD that's supposed to be pretty good to watch. But anyway, the story of, you know, reinvesting in the economy after the New Deal and kind of offering this opportunity to farmers that were kind of in a bad spot in the Midwest. They, I guess through some lottery, decided on who's coming up, gave them some land and some money, and started kind of a more substantial farming effort here. I mean, and I thought that was an interesting story, and it still seems like the history is kind of rich around here.
Absolutely.
Not to take away from people that were obviously here before. I don't.
Sure.
I think that I'm interested in the history and learning more about how it came to be. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I figured that numbers are a good business name too.
Sure.
I am a numbers guy. So they stand out. They come up first in alphabetical searches, which is kind of fun. So, yeah, went with
so
a number instead.
No direct connection to a colonist family yourself.
Nope.
You just liked the story and the history of Palmer.
Yeah, just the story.
I love it.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a good story.
Very good. It's a great story.
Yeah.
It's a story that's very important to Alaska Farmland Trust and the work that we do. So I'm glad to know that it captured your attention, too.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to share that with other people. I just mentioned it to another gal when I said that I was going to have you on the show. And she was like, what is the 203 about? And I was like, actually, it's about the Colonist Project. So that's
yeah, and
super
if
cool.
If I had a history, it would be like too on point to call it that, because I'm not trying to identify, like I'm not trying to focus any attention on like my personal background, but it's
sure.
just their background. It's
yeah.
an interesting, you can drive by farms, the colony cottages, all over. It looks great. It's a good idea.
Yeah. Very good. Very cool. Okay, so that's how you came up with the name. What spurred you to become a kombucha? Are you a brewer, technically? Is that the title?
I call it brewing. I mean, it takes yeast and bacteria and goes through fermentation. So I think that counts as brewing. I also, there's a boil in the initial phases, so it feels a lot like beer.
Yeah. background in beer?
No. I did a little home brewing back in, 2000. So I made through a few batches, but it wasn't my interest so much. But I just thought the kombucha, I've been drinking kombucha for a long time. And when I moved up here, it was available to buy here and there. But like a lot of things in Alaska, I think that the best food is cooked in people's houses, and the best kombucha wasn't available to purchase. So I figured that I should start making it myself. So I was making it in my dry cabin, which involved, you know, some complications around lugging water from random sources, which is another fun story. But I've been making it for years and years. And when I flew back to California to officially move out of my apartment, I brought back my prized SCOBY that I've had for a couple of years down there, which came from a long line of SCOBYs, similar to the whole sourdough starter concept up here.
Yep.
So I made some sourdough. Up here with the starter that who knows how long it's been around. Like someone got me a piece, who gave me a piece. So I feel like Alaskans and the sourdough concept was kind of neat. Fermentation's been a part of what you guys do up here. So
yeah,
I was making it for myself and bringing it into the Colony Middle School where I was substitute teaching for a few weeks. And only after a few weeks, basically, I decided that it was something I should pursue full time.
Okay, very cool. Well, quick interruption to remind folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is David from 203 Kombucha. And we were just talking about how you got started. So trying it out on middle school kids, it was very popular, and you thought, let's do, I mean, this is just kind of a weird business story. Not something you always intended to be, a kombucha brewer.
No. I have a skateboarding business in California, and I like doing things myself. I like to build things. I like the idea of branding and creative processes. And without the restrictions of that corporate job, especially restrictive because I worked at a nuclear power plant, I mean, it's sort of fun to have, feel like I had freedom. I could do what I needed to do. I had saved up a little bit of money. And investing in yourself is important. So I figured you might as well just do it.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, before I forget, let's talk about where people can find it. Website, social media, all those things. Mm-hmm. Where can we learn more about 203 Kombucha?
Well, been a lot of news lately. Every week I'm trying to get a new customer. So you mentioned Turkey Red. Non-essentials in downtown Palmer is sort of my primary howler, growler refill station. They have a larger kegerator with like four or five flavors. You can get stuff filled there all the time. And now it's at Humdinger's Pizza.
Oh, great.
Bleeding Heart Brewery is always carrying usually a unique blend. They've got sort of a hoppy lemonade right now. And just later next month, actually, we are moving into our own retail-style facility, so people will be able to come in there, watch the processes, get some tours, have some samples, and maybe a little coffee if I can figure out how to pull a shot. But in Anchorage, we're at La Bodega. You can go to Girdwood Brewing, Jack Sprat, a couple places in Soldotna. I dropped off a keg that's going up to Fairbanks, two new places in Fairbanks. So I feel like every week I'm adding someone new to the list. So
that's incredible.
I'm trying to get it everywhere. It's not just that I think it's a good product. I think that people are looking for something new, and the health trend has made it to Alaska, and I think I just showed up at about the right time.
Yeah, capitalizing on that interest and growth in that area of the world, that, you know, unique foods, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a SCOBY. For the listeners who are thinking, what in the heck is that? Can you talk about the process a little bit and what it takes to create this kombucha and what it starts with?
Sure. A SCOBY is an acronym that stands for Symbiotic Culture of Bacteria and Yeast. So symbiotic, you know, people up here should know that word. It's about being in a give and take and productive relationship with something else. So the bacteria, exactly. So the mutual benefit, the bacteria and the yeast live in this culture that is developed by feeding it nutrient-rich tea and a little bit of organic cane sugar. And it grows into a fairly dense kind of pancake mushroom looking mass that essentially takes up the shape of the vessel that it's in. So I have round stainless steel like brewing vessels. So they end up being these, you know, 2 foot wide by about 3/4 inch thick, just white kind of meshes that are dense enough like a Frisbee. And every batch you brew, they grow a little bit thicker. And you can peel them just like you're peeling like a layer of like a puff pastry or something. And then you have two SCOBYs and they can grow in their own vessels as new sizes. So basically I came up here with one that was about the size of a mason jar and grew it over time, bigger, bigger, bigger. Now I've got, you know, 15 or 20 2 foot diameter SCOBYs that are about, like I said, 3/4 inch thick. So that process, that SCOBY is the key factor in making the kombucha. So you basically make a normal strength, slightly sweetened tea that can be black tea or green tea or anything kind of in between.
Okay.
And cool it to room temperature and put the SCOBY in with a little bit of what they call starter tea, which is essentially just kombucha from the last batch to take the pH just on the side of acidity, just a little acidic to resist bacteria or bad bacteria and mold from growing. And then you just let the SCOBY sit in that large room temperature tea with the good sealed cover but still ventilated cover for about 2 to 3 weeks until most of the sugar is contained. That's kind of where a brewer can decide how sweet they like their kombucha. They can stop the fermentation, chill it, and carbonate it, or they can let it brew and brew and brew until it turns basically into like a vinegar, which is too far for my taste. but, you know, if you're really going for it, I guess you can brew it for months. I've tasted it when it's months old.
Really?
And it is just straight vinegar. Oh. But it is, you know, still got all the probiotics and the healthy stuff for you.
Well, that was going to be my next question. You mentioned the health benefits and that, you know, Alaskans are on this health kick and perhaps that's part of the popularity of the product. What are the health benefits to drinking this as opposed to just a glass of water?
Well, if you ask people that drink it regularly, including myself, basically it helps your gut bacteria get back to what I think are more normal levels by taking antibiotics at a broad spectrum and a number of other things that are designed to help you by maybe killing a bad bacteria like you got a cold or something. It does get a lot of peripheral things that are good for your body. So those also go down the drain with your bad bacteria. So this is supposed to help replenish that and just help get your gut back to where it should be. In addition, I think it also is a good alcoholic substitute. I kind of like this Make Your Last Beer a Kombucha campaign because drinking and driving and that can just be dangerous. And Alaska has a unique law around like the breweries limited in how much they can serve. So I also like the idea that you can have one of these as your last beer and still hang out with your friends and still enjoy the scenery and sit by the fire and not feel like you have to leave or just drinking tap water. It's effervescent and a little, flavorful. It kind of has a palate that's similar to beer and it has a little fermented taste. So, and it's good for kids and you can feed it to the whole family. So it kind of brings everybody together. It's a little more inclusive. And if you drink it instead of a beer, then it is, you know, just healthier because it's less alcohol consumed.
Yeah. Well, that was another thought that came up. Can you take this to beer? Can it turn into beer? Like, I'm not a brewer. That's not my area of expertise. If you let it sit too long, if you add the wrong ingredients, can it have alcohol in it?
There's the short answer is yes, but it's easy to avoid that, and I'm avoiding it intentionally. But the different types of digestion, anaerobic versus aerobic, depending on how much oxygen the yeast bacteria stuff can get, will determine what's produced as a byproduct.
Okay.
And we are not looking for alcohol, but, you know, if you mix it with the beer or put a little cocktail together, it's pretty tasty. But I'm just brewing it to be alcohol-free.
Right.
And letting it open to air is what will help reduce that alcohol levels to, you know, 0.5% or less.
Okay.
Is what we're shooting for.
In Alaska, with our food safety, you know, laws and value-added product laws, how carefully do you have to monitor all this? Are you outside all of those rules? You have to follow some of the rules?
I have to follow all the rules. Distribution is what puts you into the real category. If you want to serve at a farmer's market, you're pretty safe. It's a fermented beverage, so it is what they kind of consider to be more naturally self-stable and resistant to bacteria. But because I have kegs and I juice the juice fresh at the warehouse. I had the Department of Environmental Concerns, the DEC, approve my kitchen.
Your facility.
It's not a food processing facility, but it's a bovered, what do you call it? It's a bottled beverage manufacturer. Similar.
Okay.
It's basically the same approval as a brewery, but a brewery has to then also get an alcoholic thing. But basically,
sure.
You explain how you clean the kegs, you talk about your sinks, your water sources. And so it has a food handling approval on it,
sure.
Which is good. You need to keep the whole thing clean because you can introduce bacteria pretty easily. It's mostly open aired and it's at room temperature or higher, 70, 75, 80. So that's not necessarily the safest place for most foods. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, another reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit. And this morning I'm talking to David about 203 kombucha. So let's now talk about the local ingredients that you're added to your kombucha to get these unique Palmer flavors. What have you been playing around with? What do you like? What didn't work?
I brought with me some essentials from California, which is some citrus fruits. So I've got a strawberry, grapefruit, and like a hibiscus lime that I just think are kind of from the old me. And then the new me appreciates the root vegetables up in Alaska.
I mean,
between rhubarb and beets and carrots, and there's just so much really rich, really tasty food up here. So I brought with me today a beet, carrot, ginger from this group in Big Lake that sells beets at a farmer's market there.
Okay.
And Bush's Bunches has beets basically year round. So I can find local organic beets basically all year round. And the carrots, the same thing. I use a variety of orange carrots and some rainbow carrots, just basically everything that comes out and whatever is the freshest. And what you end up with is a little bit of a sweeter initial juice blend because carrots and beets have a lot of sugar. So
sure.
I had to tweak the fermentation a little bit. When I first did it, it just tasted like a little too juicy. I didn't want it to taste like you're eating or drinking beet carrot juice, but I wanted to have it a little more of that bite. So up the ginger content again, just fresh ginger juice. Jeez. And then, so the ginger and the beets and the carrots combined with the right fermentation, you get this really refreshing, tasty, kind of earthy flavor. It tastes like a garden, and that is what Alaska is to me. It's basically a fresh root vegetable, very healthy. We've done some rhubarb, which is a little more seasonal, but I like it that way. The Colony Days, the parade, we sampled some of our just straight rhubarb, and rhubarb is a very sturdy vegetable, and again represents Alaska. It's sturdy. It survives these really harsh conditions, so I think it was a good representation for Palmer, and there's a lot of local rhubarb. So
yeah, absolutely. I think you could probably still get it this time of year too from Bruce Bush there, dicing it and freezing it and keeping it for their juice purposes. So so what's on the horizon? What's next? You talk about adding customers every week. You're, I assume, looking for additional customers and outlets. If people have connections, want to see your kombucha in other places, are you wanting to?
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't initially envisioning a customer-facing business. So I have a warehouse now by the fairgrounds where I just built a wholesale business. To me, it felt like it was a safer place to start, developing dozens of wholesale clients and doing my own distribution by driving to Girdwood, driving to Soldotna, driving to Anchorage. Wanted to get a steady base going there. And now that I have some confidence that I can pay the bills with the wholesale accounts, we're moving over to this great facility on the Valley and Arctic Avenue where I want to have people to come in with there's going to be a kind of a Palmer history farm theme to it. I've been doing some great Alaska picking, talking to friends of friends, getting some interesting artifacts together. So we're going to have a little bit of a history lesson over there, plus just a cool feel with an open floor plan where you can see the brewing equipment, go on tours, and more importantly, try to just develop a space that gives people in the community a place to go between hours that I think are underrepresented right now.
Okay.
In the evenings, on some of the weekends, things where, you know, maybe it's winter and you want to go out, but you don't necessarily have somewhere to go. I want to try to bring people in there, have some music, have some open mics, have some community service events, just try to get involved. I want to be part of the community. So I'm trying to, you know, get ideas for the space, but yeah, of course, new customers welcome. Are always welcome. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, our office is down that, you know, kind of off that same road. So we've been watching the facelift of that building, where the Yak had been. If folks are familiar with that, you guys are kind of in the other side of the building.
Correct.
Are you going to be in the side that the Yak was?
We're in the back
the
half.
Thing?
I think that one has been vacant for some time.
Yeah.
It was a auto repair shop.
Yeah. But, long time ago.
But the history of the building is great too. You know, it's a Hartley Motors building. It's been a Ford dealership. It was someone said it was a gas station. So even the building. Like, I envision hearing stories about it as, like, people come in and I get to serve them kombucha. They're going to tell me, oh, I used to come to this building. And,
oh, sure.
And I love those stories, you know. And, yeah.
So when is the grand opening for that? Do you have a date yet?
We do. It's going to be December 21st. So, we're calling it a soft launch, basically, because getting all the equipment up here in Alaska is taking some time. But I have what I need to have a good time. I'm going to taste some good foods that I think we're going to be offering as part of the pretty limited but somewhat snacky menu for people to hang out. And also be just collecting ideas and trying to make connections with people that maybe have an idea for a space or something that they need or would like to get involved in. So it'll be kind of a little bit of a community conversation plus soft opening plus test some food, get some feedback on flavors, and hopefully just put ourselves on the map, basically.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, you said December 21st. That's like winter solstice.
Yep, it is. Having the physics background and, you know, being involved in astronomy and all that, the solstice is the shortest day of the year. So in my opinion, it's the best day because every day gets longer. We're approaching summer. And, you know, we want something to do that day. So I think we should kind of celebrate it a little bit and, you know, look forward to the summer, but also appreciate these winters are great. They still feel good to me. And
well, it's only your second one.
I know, exactly. So maybe I can, you know, shave off some enthusiasm and get people, you know, a little more positive for that darkest day.
Yeah. Well, I like it. I'm one of those. It was like 5:30 last night, and I wasn't ready to be home for the rest of the evening. I literally found myself wandering around Lowe's like.
See?
You're right.
Come to my. I think 6 to 9 p.m. is like is a prime time where we could. We could screen short films. We could do local movies. We could do comedy and music and just storytelling. I have a thing for storytelling. So something where we can come hang out and not necessarily drink as the hobby, but more like, you know.
Part of the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just contribute and have conversations.
Well, remind folks again where they can find you online, social media, et cetera.
Yeah, we're at 203 Kombucha on all the social medias. Instagram is probably our most up-to-date because it seems to be where we get the most engagement. But we have a 203 Kombucha Facebook page, also a 203kombucha.com webpage. I say O, but I mean zero, like 203.
Right.
And then you can email me at david@203kombucha.com. And I'd be happy to take anybody on a tour of my current warehouse. It's not as pretty as a new one, but it still is an interesting process. And I get one or two people a week for sure stopping by there.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So that December 21st party, what are the hours for that?
Looking like it's going to be 6 p.m. on. We'll probably run out of food by 7 or so.
Okay.
But I'm working on some other outlets for entertainment. I'm looking for also suggestions. So looking for local artists. I have this interesting idea to showcase local artists that I think will be fun. So I need local artists, local musicians. And the key would be local storytellers. I mean, not necessarily professional, but someone that in a 10-minute or even less window can captivate an audience. I love those. So definitely reach out to me if you have any of those connections.
Perfect. Well, David, thanks for taking the time to be on Ag Matters this morning. It's been a pleasure getting to know more about 203 Kombucha, and welcome to the community, and we're thrilled that you're here.
I am too. Thank you so much.
All right. Perfect.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.